Kia ora and welcome to Sobriety Chat. My name is Lotta Dan, otherwise known as Mrs. D, and I am the community manager and content creator here at Living Sober. Today, I am joined by Kath Elliott, all the way from Australia. Now, Kath is a wife, a mother, a sister. She's an alcohol coach, an entrepreneur. We'll hear a bit more about that. A cancer thriver, and she is sober. Welcome, Kath.
Thank you, Lotta. Mrs. D, I'm so happy and pleased to be here.
I know, we finally connect. It's so nice to have someone over the ditch.
Absolutely, it is.
So tell me, I always start with the same question. How long has it been since you had a drink?
So nearly 3.5 years. I had my last drink on the 30th of June 2019, and I remember it very clearly.
What was it?
So I'm a bit of an AFL football fan, and I was watching a game of football on TV with my family. It was sort of an early evening, late afternoon match. And I was watching it drinking a Pinot Noir. And I had a bottle and then decided I might open another one. And the game was very close. And I remember feeling a bit woozy, and I got quite emotional during the game because it was so close. And I remember going to bed that night thinking how relieved I was that I had already made the commitment to have an extended break away from drinking. And that was the last drink that I had.
So you had thought to yourself, I'm going to have a break. You didn't know it was going to be long, long term at that point. Is that correct?
So I think what had happened in the past for me was I'd given myself a start and an end date of alcohol breaks because I was what I would identify as a classic sort of binge drinker. So I wasn't a daily drinker. I was much more that binge drinker on weekends, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, no off switch. And so I'd sort of to'd and fro'd with this idea that, well, I'm definitely not a dependent alcoholic, if you want to use labels, but I have issues with alcohol, so I should be able to moderate my drinking. And it was after, an event on a family holiday where my three children saw me incredibly drunk. We'd been out with some friends and I'd had a lot of, probably 4 or 5 cocktails very quickly and was completely, off my head. And my husband really had to, put me into the car and take me home, and they could barely get me out of the car. I fell back and hit my head, and my kids were really, really worried and shocked. And I guess that event really made me do some final soul searching, where I thought, the formula that I've been trying here has not been working.
So you were trying to moderate and control, and it wasn't working.
I was worried about my drinking. Yeah, it sort of crept up over time, and although I sometimes found a way to moderate, I always ended up in a blackout or a binge or some sort of, awkward, embarrassing situation. And so it was after that family holiday in April 2019 that I did say to myself that I really think I need to have an extended break from drinking and not put an end date on it and just be open to what that lifestyle might look like. And I guess it wasn't until a couple of months later that I sort of gave myself that, dry July, 1st of July, let's just start there. And I didn't have another binge after that one in April. That was what I did. I just stepped into the alcohol-free lifestyle on the 1st of July and prepared to see what would unfold.
And what unfolded?
A lot, really. I mean, you never know what's going to hit you.
No, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, I had no idea either, but you're right. You just never know what's coming around the corner. So, yeah.
You really don't. You really don't. And it's only in hindsight that you can kind of look back and go, wow, what, whether you believe that you know, there's something kind of happening for you or not in the, you know, in the world or the universe. But I guess for me, the decision to take alcohol out of my life 6 weeks later, you know, I was getting ready for work, I was in the shower, and for some reason I was feeling a bit panicky. And I kind of, it was almost like there was a voice in my head that sort of said, Kath, you know, slow down, stop rushing, go and look at your body in the mirror. You've got this new floor-to-wall mirror that we just moved house. And I kind of went out and looked at my body in the mirror, and it was then that my eyes darted to my right breast. I could see some puckered skin. I could see kind of a weird little mound. And that's the first time that I lay, you know, I lay my eyes on the huge lump that was in my breast. And, you know, I'll never forget that minute, that moment, because it took my breath away. You know, I almost struggled to get air in. I knew right then and there that something, you know, incredibly significant had happened, and that, you know, the trajectory of my life was about to change. And, you know, tried to scream down to my husband, and I couldn't get the noise or the sound out.
So you had no doubt in your mind that this was something?
I think so, because I didn't have, and I hadn't been doing really regular self-checking. It had, you know, it was winter. It had been winter in Melbourne, so I guess you're just not as exposed. But, you know, what I now know to be true about breast cancer is, particularly in younger breasts, and any breasts under 50 are generally younger. Some, and I've, you know, I have quite large breasts, you know, D, double D. You know, lumps can hide in dense breast tissue, even large ones. And sometimes it's just, you know, they can pop out all of a sudden. And I had been to the GP for a breast check about 8 months prior to it, and nothing had been discovered then. So, you know, just another, I guess, point to make is that, you know, a breast lump can show up quite quickly depending on the type of, you know, breast cancer that you have as well.
My gosh. Okay, I'm just having a quick feel now. because, you know, we know that we're supposed to do checks, but we don't always, do we? So in the intro, I called you a cancer thriver. I don't want to minimize your journey with cancer, but obviously really interested in talking about the alcohol relationship and what part you think that plays and your knowledge now around that. But if you can just sort of tell us, you know, what transpired with the cancer, and are you free of it now?
Yes. So I will, you know, start off by saying I am now cancer free and have been for a couple of years. And again, I don't want to minimize the experience of going through cancer. You know, I would not wish a cancer diagnosis on anyone, but I have been able to use my experience through cancer to do, you know, a lot of positive things, which I am very grateful for. We all get thrown curveballs in life, and I'm lucky. I've always had a positive attitude to life and to challenges. You know, some of us have that, others of us don't have it so much. And for me, I saw it as an opportunity to really take a 360 look at my life, the things that I was doing well and maybe the things that I wasn't doing so well. And I wanted to really, I guess, look more holistically at my lifestyle. And one of the things that, you know, cropped up pretty quickly was my binge drinking, my kind of dysfunctional relationship with alcohol, really, that started, you know, as a teenager growing up in Melbourne in the 80s. That just popped up, and I thought to myself, I have been in many areas quite healthy, you know, healthy diet, always exercise, done quite, you know, a lot of personal development. But the two things that stood out to me was my drinking. And the other one was I always, even during stressful and challenging times, tried to deal with things on my own, very self-sufficient. I'll get stuff done on my own. And you know, there was this always this voice in my head that was like, you know, you can do this, you don't have to tell anyone, you can do everything on your own. And even my whole relationship with exercise was, what I can see now, was a bit, you know, not quite right. It was exercising more as punishment for drinking, exercise as punishment for eating, you know, all of this sort of thing. So those were the two main things that came to me. So I started to do quite a bit of research into the links between alcohol and breast cancer, because I asked people and no one seemed to really know much. And even when I was going through my diagnosis and treatment, my doctors didn't ask me about my relationship with alcohol. You know, obviously there was
crazy.
Oh, it really is a recommendation not to drink a lot, but there was not much really, I guess, there wasn't a lot of information provided to me.
But, Kath, alcohol's normal. It's fine. Yeah. Everyone does it. It's cheap. It's available everywhere. How could alcohol be a problem, right?
Oh, exactly. And, oh, you've got cancer. I mean, you know, a drink or two is not going to harm you. You need to relax and relieve the stress, you know, all of this sort of messaging that we get. And the normalisation of excessive alcohol use in Australian culture is beyond ridiculous.
And England and America. I mean, in the most westernised countries.
And Ireland and, you know, it's crazy. And so this is what, you know, we're up against, really. And so for me, I just thought I'm going to start doing my own research, and I was quite shocked at what I discovered. It was, there's been, you know, hundreds of studies undertaken over the past 30, 40 years.
The science is irrefutable.
It is irrefutable, and it is there. And, you know, interestingly, breast cancer charities aren't out there really doing a lot about it, because, of course, they fundraise through using alcohol sponsors, through people going to their functions and drinking, so they splash out more money. So there's sort of this kind of insidious stuff going on under the surface as well.
I cut you off though, but what did you find? Like, what is the link between alcohol and breast cancer?
So obviously all studies, you know, do come up with, I guess, different sort of statistics. But I guess in summary, there is, every drink you have increases your overall breast cancer risk. So 7 drinks a week, 1 drink a day, can increase your overall breast cancer risk by between 15 and, you know, 23%, which is pretty significant.
Yeah. Alcohol causes cancer or raises your risk of cancer, which an epidemiologist told me is the same thing.
Oh, absolutely.
But she says it's a very, I mean, because I did interviews on this for my third book that I wrote, where I researched the links between alcohol and cancer. And the epidemiologist I interviewed said it's a very slippery, she had this way of putting it, it's a very slippery idea to kind of explain to people, because it's not everyone who drinks alcohol or even a lot is going to get cancer. So there's that element of, even though, yes, we know it raises your risk exponentially every other drink you have, there are those who don't. So it's a hard thing for people to grasp onto as a definite.
Oh, it absolutely is. Because, of course, there are plenty of people who excessively drink and don't get cancer. Yeah. And so I'm really about generating awareness so people can make more educated decisions in their own life about how much they drink. I mean, in Australia, the figures that are being floated around at a minimum level are, you know, 1 in 10 cases of breast cancer, you know, directly linked to alcohol consumption. And so if we've got 20,000 cases of breast cancer diagnosed per year, that's round about 1,000 cases, which is a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. The other problem, of course, is the liquor industry, which is really good at muddying the science. And I've read one paper which did an analysis of how the liquor industry is using exactly the same tactics that the tobacco industry used to distract and, muddy the thinking around it. So you might say to a lobbyist, you know, alcohol causes cancer. And they'll come back with, well, so does sunlight. So your brain goes, oh, yeah. And it moves away from the fact of alcohol. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's all these clever, horrific, really, tactics that they're using to hide the fact that their product is inherently toxic and dangerous.
Oh, absolutely. And look, you and I both know, when you strip it back, alcohol is a toxin. It's a poison. And, you know, there's no way of dressing that up. And every time, you know, you're drinking, there is always the possibility of some form of, you know, of DNA damage. That's absolutely, you know, what I know to be true. And I think, you know, it's so interesting because, yes, alcohol companies always come out with this, you know, this diatribe about the fact that, you know, everything causes cancer now. No, not everything does. And we now know that alcohol can cause up to, you know, 7 or 8, you know, different types of cancer and more.
Yeah, and you're doing amazing work in this space now. And I'll link in the notes when I put this up on the site to your Instagram. And you've got this, you know, the reason I put entrepreneur in the intro is because you've got this product now that you are selling, which is a natural product. It's also raising awareness. I mean, it's just amazing what you're doing, Kath. And to use your lived experience and something that, you know, that moment you describe in the mirror and that feeling of this is a massive, I mean, that you're using that lived experience now to help others is just so great. So, you know, thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that.
So what I'm interested in is also, how is your life now that you don't drink and that you've been through the treatment and you're just living sort of as a sober mum, wife, sister and all the rest of it? How is that for you?
Yeah, look, it's complex. You know, I say to people, living a sober life for me has been like incredible in many ways, but you're also choosing a lifestyle that not the majority of people are not living. So there are some difficulties in that. You know, I've had some, you know, friends who found my choices quite difficult and hard because it changes the dynamic of your relationship. But it's also opened the door to so many really new friendships as well. And even, you know, with my husband, you know, we used to drink a lot together. We've had to really reset and start a whole new relationship. He decided to stop drinking 12 months after I did, and so he now no longer drinks alcohol either. And so it's been, you know, it's been an interesting period even for us adjusting to what an alcohol-free lifestyle is. And we're still trying to find our way in that. But I guess from my perspective, the things that I've noticed personally that have been really mind-blowing is just I feel much more an ease and comfort in my own skin. And so that just makes my life feel a lot more balanced. I feel like I'm much better at putting boundaries around, you know, what is acceptable in my life and what isn't. I don't need to be socializing out and doing a whole lot of stuff all the time. I like being at home. I like my own company. I love my my, you know, the new career that I now have as an alcohol coach. I studied to be a certified This Naked Mind alcohol coach. Now, you know, I now really help other binge drinkers who are in a similar position to me. And I love that work. I love my advocacy work, which I do in the breast cancer space. And so really I feel like my life is so much more engaged and on purpose. And in this sober community, there is just so many wonderful, wonderful people who are doing really incredible things. And it's not a competitive community. It's a very endearing, loving, collective. You know, we're all here for the greater good. And I love that. I really do. It's felt like a big warm hug in what sometimes can feel like a bit of a lonely existence in a, you know, a really alcohol-fueled sort of world.
Oh, Oh, I love that you articulate all of that so well. I mean, and you're right, it's not, and I'm really happy that you sort of led with the fact that it's not peaches and roses and perfect all the time, because it's not. But, you know, ultimately you do get to this place where you're more connected with what you're doing, you're feeling more grounded in yourself. I mean, that stuff is so powerful. If you just want to bottle it, right, and give it to the people who are currently struggling. And I read something you wrote in an article that said that that what you found is the how magical the simple moments in life are.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, that came through both choosing alcohol-free and, you know, my cancer diagnosis. Those two experiences happening at the same time really, you know, I was questioning my mortality, why I was here, what my purpose was, what life was really all about, living, you know, here right now. And, you know, it isn't just a guarantee. You know, all of a sudden I was like, it's actually a privilege to be alive. And how do I want to do this? And the role of alcohol, I really looked at it and I thought, it's just been keeping me treading water. You know, I've sort of been stuck in this really, in this pattern of treading water, really beating myself up, not in a negative headspace about my drinking. And I thought to myself after the cancer diagnosis, and when I was still going through treatment and I didn't really know what the outcome was going to be, I thought to myself, one thing I know for sure is that choosing not to drink alcohol is going to ensure that I have some control over my increased cancer risk moving forward in my life, which feels really empowering to stay alcohol free. And the other thing was that being alcohol free just keeps us present, keeps us really present in life. And I thought, you know what? After having that cancer scare, I do want to be present in all moments of my life as much as I can. And so, yes, the magic is actually in all those ordinary moments. It's in feeling, you know, that beautiful sunshine on your face when you're walking the dog. It's when you hear your favorite 80s song come up on, you know, on the radio in the car, and you're just like, yeah, I love this song. All of this stuff, that's what started to build, you know, momentum and dopamine hits. Because of course, when we're drinking, we really find it difficult to experience natural dopamine, you know, highs. And what I've found since I've stopped drinking is, wow, you can access natural dopamine highs from so many areas in your life that you didn't know because you were getting it from alcohol, and so you couldn't really experience it. So that's the other thing that I love as well.
I mean, the thing about alcohol-fueled dopamine highs is that it's like a sledgehammer. Poof, you know, instant, you know, you have a drink, there it is. The natural ones, the sun on your face, the being on a water slide with your son, the hearing your favorite 80s song, that those are lovely moments. They're a little more subtle. So one of the things about that transition of becoming a non-drinker is adjusting to that more subtle nature, because you're used to the whammo. I think the further you get away from your last drink, the more you can notice those subtle little moments, and the more that you can feel them. But at first, you know, it sometimes still feels a bit flat because you're used to the instant hit from the Pinot Noir or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it takes your body a while to rebalance chemically to actually be able to experience them. And, you know, often you don't even know, you haven't been allowing yourself to feel things anyway because you've been numbing it. Or, you know, it's almost like alcohol creates a bit of a force field around physical emotions and also, you know, emotions in how we actually feel. And it takes time. There's a real adjustment period because it's quite uncomfortable. We're not taught how to experience feeling and sitting in what can be really uncomfortable. So, you know, even now, if I have, you know, a disagreement with my husband, you know, in the past, I would have been drinking, you know, drinking, drinking. And now you've actually just got to sit with it and experience it and deal with it and process it.
Exactly right. So this sober space that you describe so brilliantly as a warm hug, it has really exploded, you know, since I quit 11 years ago and started blogging. Yeah. You know, there wasn't a lot, and now it's everywhere, which I love. You know, social media, you can fill up your feed with the people you relate to who are talking about not drinking. However, we still do have, don't we, this normalized kind of trend of people, but especially women and especially middle-aged women who are doing this heavy binge drinking. Where do you see this going? Are we going to be able to chip into that kind of normalization of the society we live in?
Yeah, it's really interesting that middle-aged women at the moment are really, and that this is, you know, we're talking that sort of, you know, 40 to 65 sort of age group. This is where there is a huge increase in drinking compared with other demographics. So there's something, you know, it's a trend that's quite frightening. What I've noticed though in my group of friends is that people are starting to look at their relationship with alcohol more seriously. And binge drinking in this age group is also increasing. So there was a recent study that came out in Australia to say that, you know, 20% of women in that age group are noticing that they are binge drinking, and it feels like a problem for them.
It'll be so higher than that too, because it's self-reported and people underreport what they're drinking.
Well, always. I mean, I always I mean, I never reported the truth. I reported what I thought the GP would want to hear. You know.
Yeah. Or you said, "Oh, I have one wine," but your one wine's actually three standard drinks, which is what I was doing.
Exactly. Or I would say, "Yes, well, I had 5 to 10 drinks in a week, but I had all of those on a Saturday night." You know, that they don't ask you those questions.
No, that's right. Yeah, well, we just have to keep chipping away doing what we're doing and hope that the trend is going to slowly shift. And I don't know what's happening in Australia, but in New Zealand there are politicians now, and even our government is putting forward a bill that is starting to shift some of our regulations around alcohol, which might shift some of that normalization of the marketing and advertising and the targeting. Women are so targeted with ads. Is it crazy over there at the moment leading up to Christmas?
Oh, yeah. You know, mummy wine culture. And even I went into a gift shop, you know, to buy a card for a friend who was turning 50. And, oh, my gosh, just the cards and how alcohol-centric they were. Mm. And the memes, I was shocked. I was like, you know, this is like pushing it in people's face. It really, you know, you're so much more open to all of that now when you're on the other side and have a different perspective. But, you know, I was like, no wonder people don't stand a chance sometimes, because they are getting these messages everywhere they go, social media, you know, through catch-ups with friends, marketing, walking down the street, billboards, you know, family events. It is everywhere. And yes, we are seeing changes, because there is a lot more coming out into the media now, and that, you know, a lot of people are more sober curious. It's not always about, you know, stopping drinking, but it's also about looking at the role of alcohol and how it plays out in a healthy lifestyle. And, you know, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and, you know, this suggestion came up that really, hopefully in 20 or 30 years' time, alcohol will be more that occasional drink that people will have 3, 4, 6 times a year, not something that they're doing every week.
Right. Hey, we don't have long, but I do just want to quickly ask you, because I know that you are also a mother of teenagers, and like my teenagers, your teenagers are starting to have the odd drink, because that's what all their friends are doing. It is, we have to accept it's a normal thing, right? Because we did it too. And I don't know, how are you coping, Kat?
Oh, this is, Lotta, this is a tough one, because, you know, when you, obviously, you know, we have values now around alcohol, and it's difficult, but I also completely understand that this is sort of, you know, age appropriate stuff that you go through when you're a teenager and that you're experimenting. And I, you know, I don't want to, I guess with my boys, I'm very much, I think you just role model, you continue to role model, you continue to give them the information about the experiences that you've had with alcohol. And I talk about, you know, how I found some things really difficult when I was a teenager and made some quite bad decisions around drinking, or found myself in situations when I, you know, had blacked out, where I was embarrassed, or I, you know, wet the bed and things like this, just to say, you know what, it's actually, it can cause.
It has a dark side.
Yeah, there is a dark side. But, you know, I think if you come down on kids and say, don't do this, don't do that, they're going to do the opposite. So it's really about, you know, I think just role modeling our lifestyle and showing them there is a different way. That at dinner time, you know, when we're having dinner, we don't have bottles of wine there. We talk and we do it differently.
Yeah, and we relax in different ways and we can still have fun. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I always also keep thinking, you know, my kids, they have to figure out their own relationship with this drug, and it is their journey. So yeah, you're right. You know, it's amazing what we're doing. Modeling in the house is really powerful. And then just trying to, I don't know, cross our fingers and hope that the mistakes aren't dire.
No, and you're right. It is their journey. And this is our journey, you know, and that's what I say to people. I'm not here to tell people what to do about their own relationship with alcohol. If you're happy with it and you like a few drinks, you know, good on you. It's really about, there are a lot of people who struggle with their relationship with alcohol, and you know, if you can join the sober community and get support, find like-minded people, and find a relationship with alcohol that improves your life and makes you feel better, well, you know, that's what we're all really trying to do.
Yes. How amazing. Ooh. You are lovely. So happy to connect with you. Thank you for coming in, doing a sobriety chat with us, and just keep up the great work. I'll, like I say, I'll share all the links to all your stuff so people can find you, and thank you.
Amazing. Thanks, Lotta. And I do have to say, your book is one of the favourites on my, I always recommend books for my clients when they do a program with me, and I have to say, they love Mrs. D.
Oh, thanks so much. All right. I'll see you later.